Welcome to Prison Pipeline, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. On May 2nd, a symposium on ending solitary confinement will be held at Portland State University in Portland, Oregon. It will bring together advocates, experts, and people who have survived solitary confinement. It is presented by the Oregon Justice Resource Center, and here to talk about this event are Alice Lindell, Director of Communications, and Mark Wilson, Policy Associate and Legal Assistant, both with Oregon Justice Resource Center. Alice, Mark, welcome.
Thank you. Hi, Karen.
Hi. Thank you, Karen. Thanks for having us.
So, Mark, you are someone who has survived solitary confinement in prison. So let's start with, how do we define solitary confinement?
Well, that's kind of the problem, is that prison officials use an endless array of euphemisms for solitary confinement, but it all really defines the same practice, the single practice of burying someone alive in a cell that's typically the size of a parking space or a little smaller for 22 to 24 hours a day. But the euphemisms used range from administrative segregation, disciplinary segregation, supermax, control units, security housing units, intensive management units, special management units, behavioral management units, restricted housing. It's endless, right? And so a lot of times prison officials will say, we don't have solitary confinement, when in fact they use these things that are solitary confinement. And so we define that, and the UN defines that as being confined in a isolated cell for a period of up to 24 hours a day, but typically 22 to 24 hours a day.
So, Mark, I remember 15 years ago when the United Nations Special Rapporteur said that solitary confinement in excess of 15 days is torture.
Yes. So in 2011, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Torture declared that solitary confinement can violate the international prohibition against torture and cruel, inhumane, and degrading treatment. In 2014, the Committee Against Torture, which the U.S. is a party to and which is the governing body of the Convention Against Torture, expressed concern about America's use of solitary confinement and recommended that the U.S. limit its use of solitary to a measure of last resort for the shortest time possible. But of course, we in America didn't care what the UN said. Well, then in 2015, the UN's General Assembly unanimously adopted a resolution titled Standard Minimum Rules for the Treatment of Prisoners, which are commonly known as the Nelson Mandela Rules. Those rules declare that under no circumstances may restrictions or disciplinary sanctions amount to torture or other cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment or punishment. They expressly prohibited prolonged solitary confinement, which the UN defines as being in excess of 15 consecutive days. For periods less than 15 days, the UN declared that solitary confinement shall be used only as an exceptional case, as a last resort for as short a time as possible. But again, America really hasn't gotten on board with that. There are many national and international groups who have followed the UN's lead on this and have applied some pressure to the states to stop using it as a torture device. But prison officials still, even when they cave to the pressure and say that they are limiting or reducing or stopping the use of solitary confinement, they're really just changing the name to one of these other names and continuing to do the thing they've always done.
What is the average stay in solitary confinement for a prisoner in an Oregon prison?
Well, it depends on what type of solitary confinement you are in. There is something called the intensive management unit or administrative segregation that can be indefinite, and people have been there for decades. Disciplinary segregation used to be capped at 180 days, and as a result of some of the litigation and legislative efforts of our organization, they reduced that cap from 180 days to 90 days. I personally did 120 days in segregation.
Yeah, talk a little bit about your experience in solitary confinement.
Well, prison officials tend to advance the narrative that solitary or segregation is used only for the worst of the worst, those who commit violence in prison. That is simply not the case. What I saw when I was there is that it is largely filled with people with mental illness, extreme mental illness. For me, I was there because prison officials decided to retaliate against me for my efforts to help prisoners access the courts in suing the Department of Corrections for denying them medical care. And in my case, we learned in my lawsuit that they intended to keep me, so they sanctioned me to 120 days in disciplinary segregation. They intended to keep me in indefinite segregation beyond disciplinary segregation. And if not for a senator asking the director of corrections why I was in segregation, they would have continued with that practice. But we saw in the discovery that once he did that, they backed off of that.
And talk about your time in solitary confinement. How did you spend your time? What were the psychological effects? What were the physical effects?
Yeah, that is really hard to make you, someone who hasn't experienced it, really feel what it's like. But you are, it's sensory deprivation. There are no clocks. The windows are blacked out. The temperature, in the winter months is freezing cold. In the summer months, it's very hot. There's no stimulation at all. You're not allowed to watch a television. There's no programming available. It's designed for you not to have any human contact whatsoever. It is an environment of you being put in a cage and treated like an animal. Anytime you are out of that cage, you are placed in handcuffs behind the back and escorted by multiple officers to a different cage. Say if you need a shower, you get a shower 3 days a week, and you are, at 5 o'clock in the morning, two officers come to your cell. They tell you to back up to the bars. They put handcuffs on you. They walk you to a shower and they lock you in the shower and take the handcuffs off and they keep you there till you're done. And that's kind of how you are treated throughout that entire environment. There's a recreation cage on the tier, and I use air quotes for recreation because it's simply, it looks to me like a dog walk in a kennel, where they take you out of a cell and put you into this space that's as small or as narrow as your cell, and your recreation is you get to pace back and forth for 10 minutes. So there's really no recreation, there's no stimulation. And so when people are subject, and there's a lot of noise in there, there's, like I said, there's mental illness, people self-harm in there. There people attempt and succeed in committing suicide in these units. It's really brutal. There are people that end up flooding their cells out, which impacts everybody on the tier. It is a horrible, horrible environment. And it's designed to be that way. And if you complain about it, the response is, if you don't like it, don't come to segregation.
Mark, why does this barbaric practice continue?
Well, that's a good question, but really it's because the Supreme Court of the United States says it's okay. So as early as 1890, the United States Supreme Court recognized the severe harm caused by solitary confinement and acknowledged that people actually commit suicide there. And that's in a case called In re Medley. In 2015, Justice Kennedy acknowledged in a case that years on end in near solitary confinement extract a terrible price. Common side effects of solitary confinement include anxiety, panic, withdrawal, hallucinations, self-mutilation, suicidal thoughts, and behavior. In 2018, Justice Sonia Sotomayor cited the 1890 Medley decision and noted that solitary imprints on those that it clutches a wide range of psychological scars, and she said that it comes perilously close to a penal tomb. However, the reason we have solitary confinement is in 1983, the United States Supreme Court declared that the phrase administrative segregation is something of a catch-all and said This is the sort of confinement that every prisoner should reasonably anticipate receiving at some point during their incarceration. And that decision remains binding still today, despite some of these justices recognizing the harm that it causes. The majority of the court says, we don't care. And, in these cases, they've acknowledged that in these supermax prisons or units, these people have been in these units for decades, and the only limitation on the length of their time in supermax is the duration of their sentence. So if someone is serving a life sentence, they can be in solitary for the rest of their lives.
But Oregon is a progressive state, so where are our
Is it?
elected officials with this
Yeah.
issue?
We like to believe we're a progressive state, but in my experience in the criminal justice realm, our elected officials are anything but progressive because they allow these practices to continue. We should be a leader in the nation on this, and we're not because elected officials don't seem to care.
And Alice, the name of the symposium is Solitary Confinement, State-Sanctioned Torture, a symposium on ending solitary confinement in Oregon. How does Oregon Justice Resource Center plan to end solitary confinement in Oregon?
Well, I suppose I should say you have to come to the event to find out, right? To get you to sign up. What I will say is that I think there are a lot of different tactics that we can use to bring an end to solitary. As Mark has been explaining, this is an incredibly heinous practice that is causing a ton of damage to people. It is dubious as to whether it is really necessary to use it to anything like the extent that it is being used. And we have the tools here in our state to end this, right? This is something that the Department of Corrections today could start cutting back on. So I think for people who come to our event on May 2nd, what they're going to hear about is a whole bunch of different ways that we're going to do this. You know, this can be about public pressure. This can be about educating Oregonians to help encourage people to demand change. This can be about identifying who are the people with power over this situation that we can get it engaged with the issue and we can encourage them to change things. And yes, it could look like whether it's legal action, whether it's making changes to statutes, whether it is putting pressure on the governor because the governor ultimately is overseeing the Department of Corrections. I think there's a lot of different ways that we can approach this. And I think there's ways that anybody can get involved if they want to. And that's why we're encouraging people to come to our event on May 2nd so that they can learn more. They can find out in a lot more detail than we're able to tell you about in this conversation what solitary looks like in our prisons and hear from people who've been through it, hear from Mark, but hear from other people as well who've been through it, and find out how you kind of get involved in this campaign.
And Alice, you know, there's people out there who this issue, solitary confinement, well, prisons in Oregon or prisoners, but solitary confinement, it's such a an issue that, you know, everyday people would say, how does that affect me? Why should I go to such a symposium? Why should I educate myself or even be concerned about this issue? Explain how this affects every Oregonian.
I think there's a couple of reasons. One is that it's commonly a myth that people believe that contact with the prison system, with jails, with the criminal justice system is rare. In reality, about one in three Americans at some point in their lives will have contact with the system, will be involved in the system to some degree. So, you know, thousands of people will cycle through our prisons and cycle through our jails and may experience solitary. We're not talking about a very tiny minority of people. We're talking about something that can happen to a lot of people. And we as a community have to think about what it says about us if we're willing to treat people in this way, right? We have to think about how does it reflect on our values as a state and our humanity if we accept treatment of people of this kind. I think the other aspect of this is that almost everybody who goes into prison is going to come out. I mean, the numbers, something like more than 95% of people who are incarcerated will leave prison one day. And given the ways that we know that being in solitary does physical and psychological harm to people, and people may pretty much come straight from solitary out into the community potentially. Do we want to have people who have been damaged by time in solitary and then bring them out into the community and tell them, off you go, time for you to figure things out now? We know that people struggle a lot with reentry, and piling on top of those struggles, the harm that solitary can do, just doesn't seem like a smart thing to me, and has the potential to create problems for our community as a whole, and not just for the individuals that actually have to undergo solitary.
And Mark, you talked a little bit about the law and legislators, but our Eighth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution prohibits cruel and unusual punishment. And this sounds like cruel and unusual punishment to me. So talk a little bit more about the law and why this is still happening in the United States and here in Oregon.
Sure. So the Eighth Amendment to the United States Constitution and Article 1, Section 16 of the Oregon Constitution do prohibit cruel and unusual punishment. And in fact, the Supreme Court has said that an animating factor of the Eighth Amendment is that prisoners do not lose their claim to human dignity while they're incarcerated. However, those who have studied solitary confinement say human dignity is exactly what you lose when you're placed in solitary confinement. And that's exactly what solitary confinement strips people of. We also have in Oregon Article 1, Section 13 that prohibits the state from imposing unnecessary rigor upon a prisoner, which the Oregon Supreme Court has said constitutes needlessly harsh, degrading, or dehumanizing treatment. To me, that's solitary confinement to a T. The reality is, courts just simply don't care, largely because they are taking their lead from the United States Supreme Court, who has said, so what? Prisoners should expect to experience this. It's estimated there's 122,000 prisoners in solitary confinement in jails and prisons in America on any given day today. So this is a huge problem. It's not something that is mandated by any law. There's no statute that says solitary confinement is a part of a prisoner's punishment. Prison officials dream this up. They've created it through administrative rulemaking. They could simply stop it today if they wanted to. They simply do not want to. It is a tool and a weapon that they use to inflict harm upon those that are in their custody. And if people outside prison don't care about what happens to prisoners, that allows these kind of things to go on.
Alice, talk about the symposium that will be happening on May 2nd at Portland State University.
So, as you say, we're getting together with everyone May 2nd. And then this is an event which is anyone can attend this, right? We have a web page up on our website right now. So it's ojrc.info/solitary-conference. But if you go to the Oregon Justice Resource Center website, which you should be able to find pretty easily in your browser, and under our events tab, we have a tab for our solitary conference. It's a one-day event. Portland State University very kindly are hosting us at Hoffman Hall in downtown Portland. We're going to be gathering in the morning, and we're going to be going through the whole day. In terms of what's going to be happening, so we're going to hear from speakers who have personally experienced solitary confinement in Oregon, people who've been in prison here at different times and have experienced different manifestations of solitary confinement. They're going to share some of their stories. We're going to hear from some of the advocates who are working on this issue and working to end this practice. We're going to hear from some experts who can tell us more about what are the ways that solitary confinement affects people. As we've been talking about, there are physical effects, there are psychological effects, We're going to talk about some of those ways that people are affected. And of course, we're going to talk about what the strategies are that we can end this practice. We're going to finish up the day with a panel that's going to look at, based on everything we've heard through the day, what are we going to do now to put a stop to this in our state and end solitary confinement in Oregon prisons. So this is an opportunity if you are interested in our prison system, if you want to hear from a whole range of people with a lot of knowledge and lived experience and expertise, if you want a chance to connect with other people in your community who are concerned with what is happening inside our prison walls and want to be part of positive change around these issues, this is a great opportunity to come and join us. We will be serving a hearty lunch. We're going to have a breakfast as well. So we're going to keep you well fed through the day. We have tickets on sale right now. So our general admission price for the whole day is $45. We have a student rate that's $25. We offer free admission for anyone who has been incarcerated in the prison system in Oregon or elsewhere. That's something that we often do at our events, is offer that free entry in recognition of the contribution that formerly incarcerated people really make to the events that we hold. And we also have, for Oregon attorneys, we actually have an opportunity to get some legal education credits, and we have tickets for that as well. But if you go to the website, ojrc.info/solitary-conference, you can find all of the information there, a full breakdown of the day, and you can see all the registration for the different tickets and sign up now.
So, Mark, can you talk more about what is going to happen at this symposium? What people will hear about the stories, the psychological effect, the physical impacts, and the human cost of solitary confinement?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that is, that is the real tragedy here, is that there is a real human cost here. In April of 2023, Prison Legal News published a tragic story that I wrote about a mentally ill prisoner who had been confined in an Illinois supermax for more than 22 years. I used one of his quotes in my title. His quote was, "I was scheduled to die in solitary confinement." And I added to that quote, "and may soon be again." And I recently looked him up and was saddened to learn that, in fact, just 1 year after I had that story published, he did, in fact, die at 50 years old on August 17th, 2024. And he's far from alone. I've lost many friends through the years to suicide in solitary confinement. At the Oregon prison I was confined in, 3 of the last 5 suicides that have occurred at that prison have been committed in solitary confinement in cells that they call suicide watch cells, that are purportedly designed to prevent someone from committing suicide. But instead, it really looks like suicide watch cell means literally that we watch them commit suicide. This should not be happening. And isolation is the worst thing you can do for someone who says they're suicidal, but that is the Department of Corrections response, is to remove them from general population, remove them from the connection of the community that they have, and place them in isolation with no clothing except for a suicide smock, no property, in a surveillance cell, and we see them commit suicide. And one of the leaders in discussing solitary confinement is a former Minnesota professor by the name of Lisa Gunther. She has a book called Solitary Confinement: Social Death and Its Afterlives. And one of the best quotes that she has in that book that really resonated with me was, "There are many ways to destroy a person, but one of the simplest and most devastating is through prolonged solitary confinement." And that is so true. And she says, deprived of meaningful human interaction, otherwise healthy prisoners become unhinged. Not only psychological or social identity, but the most basic sense of identity is threatened by prolonged solitary confinement. And I think that that's ultimately what sadly, what you will hear from the people that are at our symposium that have lived experience is some of the ways that it negatively impacted them. And as Alice mentioned, 95% of our prison population returns to the community. So this is an issue that should concern the community, because Do you want someone coming out of prison better than they went in or worse than they went in? And someone who has experienced long-term solitary confinement inevitably is going to be coming out in a worse position than they were when they went into prison, because solitary creates mental illness in people that didn't have it, and tremendously exacerbates mental illness in those that did have it. And there's nothing good that comes out of solitary confinement. And it takes people a long time to adjust to their experience in solitary confinement. When you've been isolated and solitary for a long time, just coming back out to general population, the stimulation is overwhelming to people. And going from, general population into the free world, the stimulation is greatly overwhelming. For someone that's been in a, 6 by 9 cell for years on end. So it is a horrible practice that has so many different detrimental impacts on people.
Alice, one more time, give that information about the symposium on May 2nd.
Sure. So our solitary confinement symposium, it is May 2nd. We're going to be at Hoffman Hall at PSU. If you visit our website, it is ojrc.info/solitary-conference. You've got all the information on there, and we have the registration link as well.
Alice, Mark, thank you so much for being here and all the best with the symposium.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for caring about this issue. And I thank your listeners for caring about it. And I hope to see you all there.
You've been listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. I'd like to thank my guests, Alice Lundell and Mark Wilson, with the Oregon Justice Resource Center. And thank you for listening.